And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Declare Independence with me, Ernest Hancock, here in Phoenix, Arizona, from the BEA Beautiful Studios of Freedom's the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com, and you can declare your independence without me. You do it all by yourself. I declare my independence. No government form. You know, this is today in the third hour. Let me tell you what's going to happen. I'm going to build up to that. Is Mr. James Bovard. Mr. James Bovard, he is an author and a friend, and I've known him for, God, man, when did I first meet him? Probably 93. I mean, it's been, man, I know people a long time, man. It's like, that's 20 years. He wrote a book, Lost Rights, and it was very popular. I remember he came here to Phoenix, and at the Hyatt Regency downtown, they had a big lunch, and it was kind of a reveal, you know, with his book. And we used that book several times to, you got someone that, no, that would never, no, they wouldn't, oh, it's not that bad. You never, read this. And you just go, damn, you know, and you see it all around. It's just all the abuses that we see. I tell you who chronicles it a lot, better now with, video and actual, oh, yes, they did. It wasn't a case or a lawsuit or a story or, the rest of the story kind of thing in Lost Rights. It's cop block, police accountability projects and stuff like that. They go like, heck yeah, they're doing this. They're just beating the crap. We'll go over some of them a little bit today. That's what we're going to do today. I'll tell you. But third hour, James Bovard. So we got that to look forward to. So what I'm going to do is, and we'll talk about some of his most recent columns that's been published. He's been writing a lot of stuff. It's going around a lot of places. And so, of course, we get to publish them. He's very nice. He publishes on Freedom's Phoenix, too. So we're going to go ahead and talk about, what's going on. And just, the Snowden thing, Manning thing, all the things. And I'm just, I have the capacity on Freedom's Phoenix. Here, I'll show you. Those of you that are watching video, you get to see the reason of my madness. Now, on Freedom's Phoenix, there are a lot of different capabilities that we have that we don't necessarily use all the time. If you look at the top of the page, I can pin up at the top selected articles that I want to put up that people can see. This is just the top eight that they're itty bitty. I just want to keep them up because we have so many articles that come up, headlines. We'll do, 30 to 70 a day. I mean, it's just, it's prolific, how much stuff we have. And it's just like, I blinked, I missed it. Oh my goodness, look at all the stuff on Freedom's Phoenix. Okay. Now, I'm just going to read you just the headlines. Feds threaten to arrest LavaBit founder for shutting down his service. Now, these were encrypted, secret email services that you are not, pipelined straight into the NSA kind of crap, okay? And it's like, nope, you don't know these people. And there was I don't know if it was LavaBit, I think it was another one, there's more than one, there's a couple of these that just shut down and said, no, we're done, because of Snowden. One of them was for the emails of Snowden, and they were like, oh, we want and all the past and everything you ever and whatever, and we don't keep records, and we just shut down, and life sucks, we're not giving you anything, bite me. And they're like, oh, really? So they go, you shut down your business. Rather than give us what we want, you just close your business. Well, that's a crime, probably, and we're going to get you because we can't. Okay. Now, the Guardian newspaper says Britain forced it to destroy Snowden material. Just said, I was trying to explain it to my wife, Donna, last night. She was saying, can they do that? I mean, they just come in and shut. I go, you don't understand, man. Britain and the same as any, well, yeah, it's all the same government, but Britain doesn't make any pretension about, pretend that they aren't, your rulers. They go, oh, yeah, it's that king and queen stuff, royalty, the house of we kick your butt says. And I've seen this. There was a big controversy in, I'll tell you this real quick as an aside. Can't remember his name, David something, whatever, doesn't matter. He wrote a book about the Holocaust. And it was they call him a Holocaust denier. And it was, I didn't read the book. I didn't care. He spoke at the Breakfast Club. I had him on the show and everything. What I was interested in was the effort by which the British government went to ban his book. I mean, well, heck, I'm interested already. Why would they ban your book? I mean, book banning. I'm interested in the book banning. What's in the book? Don't care. Why are they banning books? And the book was, it kind of came down to this. There weren't 6 million Jews. It was only like, hundreds of thousands or something. I'm like, seriously, man. I mean, how many you got to get to before it becomes a crime, And so that was the argument over, how big was the Holocaust and what, and Israel milk it to do and use and whatever. I'm like, well, what do you think was going to happen? I mean, so that was not my interest. I didn't care. So that was like everybody's all freaked out on, how many hundreds of thousands of people got exterminated in the camp. So I'm just seriously, that's your concern, so I guess it is a great concern to a lot of people. I'm sure it's an important issue, but that wasn't why I was interested. I was interested in and how much effort went into banning the book in Britain, that they could even do that. How do they do that? What is the argument that they use? What's the, the standard by which we can and you're not allowed and you are not approved stuff? And I'm going, okay. Now, keep in mind, we have the internet now, banning books. It doesn't, because we went through, the reason I was interested is we went through this with Vin Soprenowitz. He wrote a book called The Ballad of Carl Draga. And out of a 700-800 page book about all these, people, fighting back from all that, because he wrote a book called Sending the Waco Killers. And it was just, this pig farmer's like, tell that Reno bitch, to send in her Waco killers, because they, had been various different jurisdictions or, God, what do you want to say, departments of whatever were saying, you have to drain this and do this in your hog farming or whatever. And then it was, no, you can't do that because the idea, excuse me, I got to sneeze. Always in three. Okay. So then they said, you have to do whatever on his farm. And then they say you can't do that. So he was in this catch 22 thing. So finally, he's just like, look, man, I'm not playing your games anymore. And eventually, I think his farm went up for auction. His family bought it back or something like that. You get the rest of the story from Vin. But he was so angry, he said, tell him to send in their Waco killers. He's like, I'm not going anywhere. But we just had that same kind of situation in Northern Strip in Arizona, to where the sheriff in just, God, last month, said, look, I'm not going to, because they said, send in your Waco killers. They're quoting it. Matter of fact, they even contacted Vince Prenowitz, which is editor of the Las Vegas Review Journal until recently. I need to call and check with them. I think they're closing down that paper now. Excuse me. And so I went ahead and I said, I'll cover it. I'll take a look at it. We'll put all the stuff up. So we did. And they went and Googled all the information that was out there for any and everybody knowing it was going to become like, I said, you watch. They'll be doing some Googling before they come raid. And they're going to find out all the stuff everybody's going to know that we put and documented up there. They just called me last few weeks ago and they said, Ernie, thanks. The sheriff said, I am not serving any warrants on them. It is not worth my, risk. We ain't doing it. That's good. That's good.
Quantum Vibe. It's year 2523. There are colonies on Venus, Mars, and Mercury. People travel in bubbles, fly at hyperspeed, with brain implants and artificial gravity. A scientific genius sent his clever assistant set out on an adventure through the solar system on a secret mission to find the key to access new frontiers and save liberty. QuantumVibe.com from Big Head Press.
Rhodes, it's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Welcome back to Declare Your Independence. Okay, let me finish my thought real quick on, you know, get the stories and so on. The Ballad of Carl Draga that was written by Vince Aprinowitz emphasized something different than the Send in the Waco Killers. Send in the Waco Killers is all the government abuses, you know, all the things. As an newspaper editor, you get all these stories across his desk. But he knew as a columnist that he was better off to pick some that he thought were the most seriously going to be national news. It's a big deal, but you never really know what really is going on unless you wait 3 weeks. So he goes, we'll go ahead and we'll wait 3 weeks. And then he starts doing, you know, some real interviews. And a lot of times you find out that what happened in the first 10 minutes to an hour is closer to the truth than, you know, anything else. Or, you know, you find out later, 3 weeks, you know, you kind of get past all the spin and, you know, whatever in the media. And so a lot of the initial news, you know, we had a perfect example of that in 9/11. I mean, you all the real live footage and everything that you never see again unless you videotaped it. That was, you know, a lot of the evidence of what really was going on other than the spinning that you got later. So then you had that kind of experience with Vin. He's there getting all the stuff. And I remember we did a newspaper. We used to have a newspaper called the Arizona Libertarian in the 90s. And, the newspaper's coming along. We're going to be doing the paper. You know, this is, you know, we'll get to it later. All right. So what happens is he wrote an article, you know, how the news is really done. And what he said was, he goes, look, if you are a publisher of a major newspaper like the Arizona Republic here, Los Angeles Times, you know, Detroit, whatever, you look at what's on the front page of the New York Times, the newspaper of record, okay? Because their idea was if you went ahead and took and put something on the front page that was local, de la whatever, and the New York Times said, this is the big, giant, oh my goodness, story worldwide, got to pay attention, and you didn't have that on your front page, well, you explain yourself. So what they do is they give like advanced, you know, shots of what the front page is, especially since it's East Coast, 3 hours difference, you know, from the West Coast. So what they do is they say, all right, well, what's going to be on the front page? So that is the space that you're going to have. That's, it's going to be front page news for everybody and everything. At least, and it was true to form in certainly in the mid-90s. So, and I'm sure, you know, like forever since now, since then, it's kind of, you know, gotten a little bit different, assuming you look at newspapers anymore. But the if they had a local story, well, then you could have a local story. If they had a national story, international story, well, that was the one that you ran or something like it. Or yada, 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 yada. And then you take these photos off the Associated Press, you know, service. You get, you know, it was just so managed from the top. It was programming with newspapers. So he explained how this worked and that, you know, it was only like the columnists that really, you know, had any kind of freedom, journalistic freedom, that could, you know, do some investigative stuff and everything. And he always was able to do that. But, you know, a lot of people, they got, in fact, he was run in East Valley here, one of the major newspaper chains, and they stopped his column after he had it a year. And, you know, he got controversial in there on some firearm thing one time, and they just said, oh, heck no, and they pulled it. And we're going, yeah, how libertarian are you guys? Which is, you know, what they were trying to come off as. So he wrote the next book after sending the Waco Killers of all the abuses by government, which was kind of like Lost Rights of James Bovard. And that was a big thing in the mid-90s. You know, you had Unintended Consequences book came out, freaked out the BATF and the government. you had, which was all about, you know, abuses from the BATF and so on. It was a novel that was very popular, and I really, you can read that book anytime. It is just, man, you know, unintended consequences. To get a hard copy, it was like $300. A friend of mine got it for another friend. He just, you know, liked him. He'd never be able to afford. He always liked that one that got him a copy, $300 used. They might come back and print, and then they'll firebomb the publisher, I'm sure. But anyway, so this is kind of this book information banning thing. You know, I've witnessed it. I can see what's happened. When they had unintended consequences, it was at the book retailer, you know, kind of bumper sticker T-shirt guys at the gun shows. And the BATF come up, and are you sure you want to do that? Are you sure? You kind of, you know, I got bad. Are you sure this is kind of, are you sure? You sure? You sure? And then the story started getting out. You know, the internet just started. You know, it's we got our first email accounts in late 93. You know, so I'm going, yeah, my first email account was safe at indirect.com. Safe. Second Amendment is for everyone. And it was given to me by somebody who said, you need to be on the internet. And it was a disabled American vet activist that got it for me. You know, what was his name? Is Anthony. I can't remember. But it was, you know, a nice guy. And he was a Marine that got epilepsy from a hatch on a armored personnel carrier or something, hit him in the head and so on, and he just, man, constantly had seizures all the time. So he stayed at home and he did the computer thing. And I learned a lot from him and his wife, and they, you know, were a big inspiration always early on. So all of these stories that you're seeing now in Freedom's Phoenix, they all have a backstory. They all have more, but with the internet, you're getting it more like as you read it, like the novel is unfolding in front of you. It didn't used to be that way. It was all spin, and you had to have individuals that would go out and do it. It was rare that you get any of these. Now it's like every one of these stories. Anybody that's interested can just publish it on, you know, a blog, and it's there available for everybody with a search term of the guy's name or the incident or the city or whatever, and boom! It's like the hackerspace thing. I'm going to find a hackerspace. Just type hackerspace in the city, and there it is. I want to find police abuse. Police abuse Phoenix, nerd. I mean, you know, it's just, hello. And then there was a thing called Cop Watch before Cop Block, you know, back in the day. And they started, one guy here in the Valley, they started, anytime you had an abuse from law enforcement, you were able to post your story. You know, the officer's name, you know, badge number if you got it, what the incident was, what happened, how. And then you would start to see patterns that certain officers, you know, they got mentioned a lot. And the people out, they went, oh, hell no. Here comes the man on that. Shut down. You can't always, for never. And I'm going, yep. Now it's getting to where, you know, it's ubiquitous. The information is just, you know, that you want to know how a free market works with free information on just about everything. Where you live, where you move, what part of the city you have, how you treat, you know, or think about, you know, government, and how, you know, everything is just, you know, based on information you get from, and then you kind of sift through, you know, who's BSing you and who's the trolls and who's disinformation and all this kind of stuff. So it always eventually comes down to branding and credibility, you know, which is why Freedom's Phoenix does a lot of the stuff that we do the way we do it. It's all about the credibility because we don't censor, you know, we don't censor. We'll get into that. So, The Ballad of Carl Draga was the next book by Venn that focused on how and when people were fighting back. And we had a Freedom Summit to celebrate the Free State Project selection back in 04 or something in New Hampshire, Manchester, and they tried to ban Venn's book and him speaking at the summit. New Hampshire governor banned the book. Of course, sales went up. No!
A great new book is hard to find, with today's authors glorifying the state. I have an alternative, and his name is Taran Lupo at lupolit.com. Taran has written over 20 liberty-themed short stories, manuals, and books, ranging from nonfiction, humor, horror, and romance to young adult and children's fiction. Read the words that reflect your views. Read Taran Lupo at lupolit.com. A traveler? Well, check out Taran's free audiobooks, perfect for your lifestyle. Stop supporting authors that support the state. Instead, support lupolit.com.
Imagine someone in your community getting in their car, turning on the radio, and hearing the Liberty Radio Network. You can make that vision a reality with your own micro radio station. Visit broadcast.lrn.fm to learn how you can put our programs on the air in your area. You can have lrn.fm running around the clock, and you can even add in your own local shows. Building a radio station is simple, but programming isn't. That's where lrn.fm comes in. Learn more at broadcast.lrn.fm. That's broadcast.lrn.fm.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock. To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800.
Welcome back, and we'll get to the news here in a little bit. You know, after I finish my rant. So now we have, as time went on in the 90s, with James Bovar being the third hour. And, call Vin. See if you can schedule him. I'd like to, catch up with Vin. Go ahead and do that. It'll be a good time. And what happened is James had a big impact on a lot of his books. And he had other things, like the Bush betrayal and the Clinton this and the Solani and, save any party. He went after them all. And that was kind of the point. And we used his book, Lost Rights, when the general manager of the Air America affiliate here in Phoenix, where Charles Goyette and I were on here in Arizona, he's like, oh, well, yeah, you libertarians. And we're like, really? Yeah, you're government good? Okay, here, read this. And then, a few days, he devoured that book, and he's like, oh. After the show, he'd just come in, sit in the studio while we're finishing up stuff, and we'd yak and whatever, and, I'd go out and, have a cigarette with him or something, you get, a few minutes undivided attention, you do that, that kind of deal. I don't really smoke, but, socially. And so I really get to pick his brain. And it was interesting how much of an impact that book had on him. It was like, he's like, oh, man, and he'd hear new people, similar little stories and everything, but you never put it together that it is like a systemic thing. It is like a big deal. So after that starts to set in, then, what do you do? Who do you support? How do you, you go through a transition. The entire country has done this. I've seen it happen over the past 25 years. We would spend most of our time, if not 100%, 80-100% of the time, at least, trying to convince people that there was a freaking problem. That this was, we're spiraling out of control here. It's going down the dark side. It's going to get worse. It's bad. Blah, 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 blah. We don't have to do that anymore. They're their own worst enemy, man. They just keep being bad. So what do you do? Solution, how you survive. I'm not going to try and beat them. It's us. It's not them. It's a problem. It's us. There's not that many of them. It's like, Larkin Rose video, tiny little dot. Here's the government and all their guys and everything. Tiny little dot and all the masses of the people. Let me tell you who's finding that out. China. China's going, you piss off the village. And you got, 100,000 from the, hinterlands coming down and, kind of like the Scottish Braveheart stuff. And they just say, no, it's a lot of people. Egypt, that's what's going on now, too. They said, we don't like this ruler either. Yeah, but we had an election. They go, yeah, you're confusing us with somebody who cares. This is just worldwide. And I see this stuff, and I go, and I don't get all nutted up about it by, I'm sure a lot of people, it's important that they cover a lot of this stuff. But it's so inevitable what's happening. It is so predictable what's going on. But what's the solution? It's us. I break with thee up here. The revolution between the ears, that's it. Then you start preparing, to survive it. It's just like, where am I going to get my water, my food, this, that, that's it. Okay. Once you start putting effort towards that, you feel better. They start to lose their importance. Yeah, it's coming. I know. What else are you going to do? Complain about it? This is what, there is a seat. I'm going to try and find it. Steam Roller Austin Powers. Okay. There was this scene in there, Mike Myers' movie, the first one, Austin Powers, where he had, you know, one of the bad guys, they're in like a warehouse, and you got a steamroller. And he's doing the steamroller. He's going down the warehouse. He must be going half a mile an hour, you know. And a guy, the guard's in front of him with his hand out going, stop! As the steamroller just plows over him. That's what I see a lot of the American people doing. They go, stop! I'm yelling stop! I'm just stop! I'm defiant! I'm stop! As the steamroller goes over you. And I'm going, seriously? You know, I do the whole time you're sitting there yelling stop, you could have been prepared. Heck, move it. You know, I got to stand on the railroad track. Just step by, key it as it goes by or something. I mean, you know, grins and giggles or point it out, take videos of it or something, but don't stand on the track! And get wrapped up in the orange netting and then laid across it like Simon Legree, you know, the damsel waiting for the train to come. I mean, you know, don't help them. You know, seriously. So we had this understanding really coming full, you know, in our minds in the mid-early 90s. Then the next stage was not just how bad they were. It was what were some people doing. An entire novel, 700-800 pages. Vin Soprano wrote The Ballad of Carl Drake. Now, out of all those pages, 700, 16 pages were about this character, Carl Drake, that just said, look, I'm tired of being messed with. It was he was screaming for help. The local community were getting him for, you know, he's tar papering, you know, the top roofing of his shack and fixing. Well, he's just living on the land there, and he didn't get a permit. You got to have a permit, and we're the city of permits. And he just, I don't need a permit. Yeah, you do. And this is live free or die state. Well, he wasn't living free, so he figured he'd die. So it was the short of it was is you had New Hampshire police. I don't know if they were state, they were probably local police, stopped him, and they were giving him a ticket for having rust through on his truck bed, okay? Because they could. So that's it, done. He pulls the rifle off his, rifle rack in the back, boom, kills the two deputies, take the car, goes to town, kills the some city councilman, a judge, and then the newspaper guys grab him by the leg, Carl can't let you get away, bang, you know him too. Then the state police go after him, it's a manhunt, and they're back and shooting Ford and back and dead, okay? Ballad of Carl Draga. And what... Never was told, oh, crazy man goes, postal on all the, you know, government entities and whatever, and he's crazy. And he goes, yeah, he's crazy. He was desperate. He was an older guy that just, and he wrote letters to the editor in the Boston Globe. He wrote to the local, he was screaming for help. I just want to be left alone here. They won't leave me alone. Oh, my God. And you know these kind of guys. I mean, they just say no a lot. You say no enough to government, you wind up dead. Okay? So he said no, you know, some of them were dead. So the fact that Vin told the story, the governor of New Hampshire said they wanted the book banned. I don't know what the heck that meant, but it increased sales. So that summit that we had that fall, that was like a year later or so, Vin was one of the speakers. Manchester police tried to have, I think it was at the Radisson we had, you know, where we had the summit. And we could go to New Hampshire, is in the contract we have, you know, firearms are allowed. That's, you know, and here in Arizona, you go, yeah, you know, whatever's legal. Okay? We don't have a problem, you know, if it's legal, you know, peace out. That's about as far as they go. Well, it's legal, so, you know, we always bring our firearms. Well, we're negotiating the contracts now with the hotel. The one that we have that we've used before, they're no problem. There was another facility that we were looking to use, and we went and had meetings with them a week ago last Friday, and negotiating with them, and it was the gun thing. They're going, well, we're a school. We can't have, you know, it was a private school. It was an international graduate school of global management, you know, but it had really nice facilities there, and it's kind of semi-private, but they started taking government money. So they're going, oh, well, you know, it's a school, can't have it here. Well, that's why we don't have guys. I go, that's why we bring them, I mean, you know, for safety. But so they said, all right, non-star, don't even need to look at the room, we're done. And so that was an interesting conversation. But because we could have firearms, and because Vin was coming, and because of that book, there was the word came from on high, stop the Freedom Summit. Here comes the Free State Project they just chose here. Here comes the Freedom Summit. Here comes the author, Ballad Carl Draga. Stop. But it was in the contract. We go, fine. Cancel it. Breach contract, man. We'll have some fun with that one. Fortunately, it didn't get that far. The hotel's like, hey, we've got a contract. It's legal and bite me. Well, it's legal, but it always comes down to one person, always comes down to something. And we kind of prepped them. We said, look, they may not, see kindly towards this. They held their own, told Manchester police to get Ben, and then they showed up that Saturday night when Ben spoke. Mark, criminal defense attorney, went out and talked to him. They went and checked off the box that they were there, and everybody ignored him and said, no big deal. This is what's happening. This force now has law behind it to go and get people that just shut down their email service because they're private.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold. Did you know that FreeAid is a mutual aid, educational, and networking organization? At FreeAid, we support volunteers who provide first aid. We do outreach to the public about health and safety, and we bring together medically skilled freedom lovers. FreeAid is made possible by your generous support. Donors can receive great gifts like first aid kits, t-shirts, silver dime cards, and hoodies. The FreeAid Silver Dime Card Project is sponsored in part by Roberts & Roberts Brokerage, Freedom's Phoenix, and Don't Tread on Meme. Visit fr33aid.com.
If you can't listen to the Liberty Radio Network's internet streams, free satellite channel, or radio affiliates, no worries. You can listen to LRN.FM from any phone, anywhere. Add this number to your phone. 213-493-0309. It's a long-distance call, so make sure you're familiar with your phone's calling plan. The Liberty Radio Network listen lines are locked into our stream 24 hours a day. Call 213-493-0309. That's 213-493-0309.
Jared Gilchrist was surfing when he was attacked by a shark that took his leg. Thanks for being with us, big guy.
Thanks, this is tight.
What was going through your mind when you first realized that you were there with a shark all alone in open water?
I felt like a total badass. It bent my leg and started shaking it back and forth, and at that point I just felt, yes, this is sweet.
I can't imagine what it would have been like to see the teeth sinking into your leg like
that. It was sick. At one point, I just saw my leg just floating there in the water. It was awesome.
Okay, we're joined now via satellite by Dr. Brian Caddy. What condition was Jared's leg in when you first saw him?
It was in pretty rough shape. The shark had scissored through the muscle, and it was all just, like, hanging off the bone. It was nuts.
Yeah, I kept touching it. It was slimy as hell.
Yeah, totally. It was insane.
Well, doctor, how do you deal with something like this?
Well, you're never fully prepared for an injury this freaking cool. We just tried to stop the blood loss, and we took a bunch of photos because it's hysterical to freak out the nurses with gnarly shit like this.
This is the Onion News Network.
Freedom is the answer. What's the question?
I want to break free.
You're listening to Ernest Hancock.
I want to break free. I want to break free from your lies. You're so self-satisfied.
Okay, we have started to put the shell on the dome and a lot of the grow beds, and we've conditioned the water and start ready to put the fish in and all that kind of stuff. And I'll give you a quick look. You ready? That's all you get. Okay, done. I haven't finished the skirt that goes around and the coloring scheme that we have, and then I still got to pin it up and make it look kind of draping and so on. There's a style to it, and I'm getting all artsy fartsy, And all my friends come over and they're like, "The heck are you doing, man?" And I'm like, "Hey, man, it's cool. Don't worry about it. When I get the domes done." I was hoping to have it done by last night, but then grandkids and stuff, and we went tubing down the Salt River Sunday. I kind of bit into it, too. And a lot of 4409, he's like, and some of the guys and everything, hey, man, let's go to. All right, let's do it. We haven't gone this summer yet anyway. And he had just went the week before. He thought that was the coolest thing ever. He wants to go like every weekend now. He's like, let's go. Summer's almost over. So you go down the Salt River, and it's just, you know, I don't know, it's like a four-hour thing or something. But it's just nice, light little rapids kind of deal. If you're sleeping in your tube, some of them will wake you up. And they have one big giant island, you know, like an eight-people thing, you know, and then a bunch of little stuff. Now, the probably half of the tubes are not inner tubes anymore. They're from Ace Hardware, and they're called, I don't know, you get them, you know, in a box, and it's a floaty thing with a backrest and cup holders and nice, you know, river rafting tubes. And I go, man, this is styling. They're styling enough. It's freaking half of the tubes under these damn things. Whoever makes that, you know, they got, yeah, it's Intex or something like that. And I'm going, all right, somebody scored on this. So we blow them all up and go in. There's probably, I don't know, less than a dozen of us. But just chilling. And it was very nice. We had a good time. Donna made some, you know, pita sandwiches and got a bunch of beer. And we just, you know, tooling down the river. And it was, you need the mind clearing like that. When you're out in the middle of the desert on the water and you have wild horses, mavericks are, you know, coming up to drink. You know, you got wild animals, you got the condors and the eagles and so on, and you're just, and it's quiet except for the boom boxes they got on the river. Oh. All right, I got to tell this story. What time is it? Okay, there was this one group of young guys. You know, they had to be in their, like, 20. You know, they're, you know, 18 to 25, around in there or something. One girl, four or five guys. One guy probably had a little more than he needed to drink. You know, he's big, you know, kind of the, you know, the linebacker football guy from high school kind of thing. And he just, man, he was just ragging on Shelton because of his, he had a, like a cowboy hat on. He's going, hey, Brokeback Mountain, kind of whatever, and yeah, whatever. And he just kept hammering on it. And finally, one of the other guys is like, man, what the hell? You know, it's kind of, oh, you want to, you know, throw down? The guy, oh, he wants to fight. He wanted to have a fight. He was going to fight, you know, against these grown men. And I mean, and we have like women, you know, with us and a young girl, you know, 15, you know, attractive, you know, young girl. And I don't know who he was playing up to. And I'm looking, and his friends are like, oh, no. And the girl, of course, is like, and I just, you know, play the grandfather. I got gray in my beard guy. And I go to the girl, I'm going, you're not endorsing this, are you? No, I don't want to. I go, does he always do this? Is this kind of, you know, that behavior? It's kind of whatever. Yeah. And I go, you just want to fight, don't you? You got, oh my goodness, you got, oh, it was a mercy down, Todd. He's just one of them, you know, kind of. And then we just kind of went on, this friend's kind of admonished him, got him finally, you know, because you got, can't be, you know, too ornery because you can't go anywhere. You know, the river all goes the same place. I mean, you go, yeah, your mama, you start getting into it and verbally, and then you wind up on the beach, you know, waiting for the bus to come, and then, you know, you're going to throw down there and rocks start flying. So, you know, we kind of diffused it, but I was like, wow. You know, and I'm thinking, you know, these kids going up against adults, I go, you know, sometimes, you know, God, it can get serious. You know, adults go until what? Somebody stops breathing or something? I mean, when does he, what, and then does anybody have firearms? And we saw later they did. But it's an airsoft gun. They're just, they're being intimidating. This kid was just whacked out. How do you deal with that without law enforcement on the river in the middle of the desert? You know, how do you deal with this stuff? You just avoid it, man. Hey, peace. You know, go over there. I win! I put up my feathers and my chest went out and I won. Yeah, you win. You know, it's a, you know, you win. So, you know, we kept it a nice day. But I'm telling you, you know, there are guys like this. Of course there is people like that. You know, cooler heads prevail, you know, if you can. I mean, you know, that's why, you know, you have, you know, protection in case, you know, whatever, you know, and I don't even know if I didn't bring mine, you know, I'm just, you know, time, you know, seriously. Then it's like, you know, does a gun make a bad situation worse like that? Would it have? In the hands of the wrong people, probably. You know, for us, I mean, you know, it escalates into somebody who's going to get, you know, dead that doesn't necessarily need to be kind of whatever it's good to have and kind of maybe, and you know, and, you know, that for reasons exactly like that. So in the future, would I, you know, have some kind of protection? I take in a lone anarchist, drunk teenager kind of thing, do? Nah, maybe not. You know, I'm, you know, whatever. I just, you know, but it's just Seriously. And usually our greatest weapon is just experience in our mind and the willingness to just, hey, you know, defuse. And I knew what to do. It was all that posturing like that, when you got a female in your group, is, you know, look at how, you know, intimidating badass I am. And if you can demonstrate right away that the female does not see it that way. You do that, whatever chemically induced state that they're in, you see it, the women, you just stop giving your favors to the buttheads of the world. They have an incentive not to be a butthead anymore. So anyway, so it turned out to be a great day anyway, and we had a good time. Crisis averted. Now, when we went to the Freedom Summit in Manchester, and we had the law enforcement start trying to socially and economically and forcefully engineer us into whatever we were going to do and not going to do, where do they go? They go to the provider. You know, if you're dependent on anyone, you know, make sure you have a contract. So we always have a contract that says that we can have our firearms at the Freedom Summit. How we wound up over at the Crescent over here in the last couple of summits that we've done, and one of them Dr. Paul spoke at. When we did that, the reason I went there is because years before, probably 6-7 years before, Second Amendment Foundation had a big event there, and it was just so happens it was right when, yeah, it was like 2002, 2003, 2004, around in there, that the TSA, Transportation Security Administration, whatever, TSA were interviewing people to man all these checkpoints, you know, because they had, like, you know, National Guard or something walking around with machine guns and everything. So they decided they're going to have security checkpoints, and we got the TSA guys. As they're interviewing them, they have all these guys walking around the hotel with guns. They're like, what? You know, Second Amendment Foundation. So the hotel went, oh, you can't, and they said, and the federal, and kind of somebody flashed a badge at me, and you can't have them, we need you to, and you're not allowed. Well, they didn't have it in the contract. But he didn't say they couldn't either. I mean, it's legal, kind of whatever, but, you know, they're private. I guess they can set whatever they want. So what SAF did is they go, oh, no, everybody out there, hundreds of people. And they go, oh, you got to disarm, go put your gun in your car and everything. Oh, okay. And they did. I'm like, are you freaking kidding me? Which is one reason why we don't do it. It's just, you know, it's Washington lobby kind of crap. So we made a big, seriously, when it came down to it, you just, all right, you know, that's, I understand. So we went to them looking for another location for the summit. We need to, you know, get a bigger facility. And we went there and started talking to them just to see if they would go, oh, no, got to have firearm. And they went like this. They go, oh, yeah, no problem. You know, was this legal and so on? In the contract? Yeah. And I'll probably go, oh, I think they learned their lesson. It became such a controversy in the negative, you know, from them that, you know, they were losing all kinds of different opportunities to rent their space. So I said, okay, you put it in the contract. All right, we'll put it in the contract, whatever's legal. You know, we go, all right, cool. You know, done. And we did. And we have firearms. And we may go back there again, it looks like. You know, I can't find another place. I'm just trying to keep the cost because it's February and the room rates are really high. You know, it's like you're not going to get a discount. It's going to be like $150 a night. So we're trying to, you know, work out some kind of deal. Some of the guys can camp in my property or something. So we're working on it. I'm trying to find something cheaper. But, you know, it looks like this is probably going to be the deal. And I gotta start promoting. I mean, we're starting to do ads and everything now. So, you know, it's mid-February. We got to get rock and roll and whatnot. So this is how it's with commerce. You know, it's with where you spend your money. It's with how we fix us. We insist on exercise. We insist on what the conditions are, the contract we do. You know, not they, them, those. You just go somewhere else. Where can you go for email not to be snooped upon? And that's what this is building up to, is censorship. We'll talk about it.
The push to legalize marijuana is gaining momentum. These prescription doobies will do a whole lot more than just give patients a case of the munchies.
Proponents are piping up to say that medical marijuana can help patients with some of the chronic illnesses that have been majorly killing their buzz. Unfortunately, 36 U.S. states are still not a kind bud of the legalization argument. But in states that do have the plan, the results have been, well, pretty far out, man. Patients nationwide are bluntly asking state legislatures to finally mellow out so that they and their doctors can work jointly to stop the suffering that's making a hash of their lives.
So it's clearly an issue that means a lot to these patients.
So states shouldn't toke their time with this policy. We'd be upset if patients had to wait a long time.
This is the Onion News Network.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
No fear! No fear, no fear, no fear, no fear! And then it comes down to, oh, you got a censor! Freedom's Phoenix is covering too much of something and not enough of whatever, some, you know, whatever. So that's why we set it up to be, you know, you guys get to have whatever you, you know, I don't think there's a whole lot of positions that are not, highlighted on Freedom's Phoenix. Even the, you know, the neocon, the pro-war, what are you gonna let them, you know, whatever. And then, of course, you know, they're overwhelmed by 90% of everybody else making fun of them. But the then you have whatever conspiracy, take both. Everybody gets to have their say. It's just if you're not willing to do battle directly and openly, you know, whatever you're then, you know, you must have a weak argument or not have a confidence in or that it won't prevail or something. But yeah, some of these guys, they are persistent. Now, when they get to this ad hominem kind of, you know, yeah, well, that doesn't have any meaning because that guy, you know, parts his hair on the wrong side or something like that, you know, delete. And if they get real pain in the butt, delete the entire account, everything they ever said, everything they ever do, they never get to come back on again, done. You know, I say, you're seriously, delete, forever and always, done. You know, and then they'll come back under their name or something, and you'll delete, you know. So, I'll bet you, in 77 years we've been doing this, probably about that many accounts that I've done. But they are obvious who they are. Instigators, crazy, infiltrators, provocateurs, whatever. And it's just, and it comes from both sides. They just use, that's their job. They use our kind of sites to do whatever the heck it is they want to do. I want to go in some of the stories that we highlighted at the top of Freedom. I rarely do this, and a lot of people don't even know that feature is there because I don't turn it on all the time. To where you have stories that I can kind of pin towards smaller part at the top of the site. That these, you know, here, when you have such an overwhelming thing, I mean, we might do it with like Fukushima or something or some cool stuff, you know, with the Olympics, or you had, you know, every now and then I'll put up, you have like so many stories on one thing that you just kind of put a bunch of them up there and you, you know, read these 3, 4, 5, 6, 8 stories, and then you'll have a pretty good rounded, you know, what's coming. Here we go. And a lot of this stuff is, you know, it's amped up. There's a battle raging. Let me tell you what the battle raging is. Do you get to be anonymous? Confidential. Bitcoin. You know, at the on the front page today, near the top this morning, it's probably starting to move down already with new stories going up, but it was the Darth Vader doing this Bitcoin begging at the Pork Fest 10, okay? Davey Barker and Drew Phillips put this together, and you watch it, and it's funny as heck. Here comes, and they didn't do it as a competition. It's just right in the middle of the, it was a soapbox idol. They wanted to give this presentation. Now, dum, 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 dum. Here comes Darth Vader. And he's up there. All of you we'll be ruled by us, and we'll kick your butt, and we're the government and everything. And then his voice changes. Well, you know, I went to work for the IRS, and please let us tax your Bitcoin. Please, please, I'm sleeping on my brother's couch. I mean, that kind of thing. And it was funny, and everybody got, you know, thought it was cool. But that is exactly what was wrong with the Bitcoin conference thing in California, is you had all of these groups and everything. Look, if you'll let us operate, we'll get everybody's information. We'll voluntarily know our customer kind of thing. You let us be the central hub of the Bitcoin kind of whatever. And they just went out and they're just, you know, so these guys are like, look, man, it's called Starbucks. It's called at the mall. It's called, you know, Craigslist. Who has Bitcoin? I want to buy, sell Bitcoin. And they take their cut Bitcoin. It's a real, of course, free market kind of thing. Get into the discussion with some of the other guys, older guys. Oh, it'll never. And you can't. I'm going, really? You ever heard of Silk Road? You know, where any and everything goes? And they use Bitcoin. And so now, you know, why do you think these guys are freaking out? Why do you think they want to have access to this encryption and these emails and the secret stuff and so on? All right. But everybody's complaining and yelling, you know, stop, no, stop, we're going to do battle with and so on. And that made me think of this Austin Powers scene. Now, those of you watching on video, and I'll describe it. You can just imagine Austin Powers and I think it's Anne Hathaway, you know, whatever, one of the, you know, his babes, you know, from the first Austin Powers, is on the steamroller. They go through the henchmen, you know, in the big warehouse area, and judo chop, and, you know, and the guy goes off, and he gets on, you know, the steamroller, and he's going, and then one of the security guards, you know, moves to the side, move, and they're going about half a mile an hour, and he's, stop! You know, and I'll kind of play it as we're going here, because it makes the point that I'm, you know, making. And he's on the steamroller. Throws him off. They're going to make their getaway in a half mile an hour steamroller.
Watch out! Move! Move! Move!
Careful, Austin!
No!
Watch out!
No!
He's 20 feet away.
No!
He's 10 feet away! He's on the ball! Oh, and then they have to call the henchman's wife and tell him his henchman husband is dead. You know, this is just, it's so typical of how we deal with this stuff. I think of this scene every time we're going up against a guy. They go, just stop! And we're screaming real loud and everybody's paying attention to us as a steamroller goes over you. So step to the side, you know, yell and so on. But I mean, you know, can you be more creative? You know, can you be more? I mean, it's just you're a greasy spot on the warehouse floor now. Now what? You know, once you get the acknowledgement that they're, you know, they're bad, you know, what are you going to do? Tell them they're really, really bad. They're willing to kill you. You know, some people don't be so willing to die or go to jail for this stuff. Once you make it very clear that that's how they are, that they're bad. Okay, your job's done. Next. What's your goal? To show that they're really, 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 really bad? I'm going, this kind of stuff is, so we'll go ahead and go over some of the stories. Let's go ahead and do that. And I want to go ahead and kind of, this is what we're building up to. Now, you go to Freedom's Phoenix. At the top, you'll see sometimes I'll be able to pin up some stories that I'm, you know, trying to, you know, be a butthead. Okay, feds threatened to arrest LavaBit founder for shutting down his service. Now we go to the story. From either you help us spy on people or you're a criminal department. The saga of LavaBit founder Ladar Levison is getting even more ridiculous as he explains that the government has threatened him with criminal charges for his decision to shut down the business rather than agree to some mysterious court order. The feds are apparently arguing that the act of shutting down the business itself was a violation of the order. A source familiar with the matter told NBC News that James Trump, a senior litigation counsel in the U.S. Attorney's Office in Alexandria, Virginia, sent an email to Levison's lawyer last Thursday, the day LavaBit was shuttered, stating that Levison may have violated the court order, a statement that was interpreted as a possible threat to charge Levison with contempt of court. That same article suggests that the decision to shut down LavaBit was
over something much bigger than just looking at one individual's information, since it appears that LavaBit has cooperated in the past on such cases. Instead, the suggestion now is that the government was seeking a tap on all accounts. So I guess these guys were like, yeah, if you got a court order and you're going after a guy and he's bad, you know, they made a decision, I guess. But he's saying, like, man, they just want to tap in to everything. He goes, no. Levinson stressed that he has complied with upwards of 24 court orders for information in the past that were targeted at specific users, and that he never had a problem with that. Okay, well, somebody might have a problem, but they just wanted everything. And he said, no, I'm shutting down. More on this when we come back.
This is the Liberty Radio Network, broadcasting the latest liberty-oriented audio content 24 hours a day at LRN.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
This is the end, beautiful friend. This is the end, my only friend, the end of our elaborate plans, the end of everything that stands, the end, no safety or surprise, the end.
Can you picture the end, my friend? You know, I think Morrison was talking about, you know, death, you know, maybe even suicide. You know, I can't remember the particulars, but I always remember this song. You know, this is the end. I mean, are we at that point? The end of what? The end of our delusion? Illusion of? I mean, this was, I'm telling you, you know, this has been our main goal for decades. You know, it's like, can we end our childhood in our perception of government? This nanny state that keeps us dumbed down into, you know, why we need them. I mean, you know, that once you graduate from that, once you become an adult, once you kind of, you know, do you really want to fight them? You got, you know, they just say, ooh, we got to fight. Ooh, it's like guy at the river, man. Ooh, we got, ooh. And you go, no. Here, have a rose, man. You know, want a beer? I mean, you know, I don't see the benefit. So it's just, but it gets to the point where they just keep coming and they keep coming and they keep coming. Are you ready for when they keep coming? When there's nowhere else to go? Where your only flee is into the, you know, desert? I mean, you know, what, at what point? I don't know. That's an individual decision. And everybody wants to make the decision for you. You never resist or when to resist. And what you need to know is that it's a personal, individual decision. When you go to the Village Green and you're not the only one there and there's thousands, you know, it might be time. If you're there by yourself, that's what, you know, Mr. Anderson was always saying. He's going, hey, man, when you go to the Village Green and you're the only one there, it's not time. When you go to the Village Green and it's a million Cairo residents saying, it might be time. I mean, that's what it takes. And that's what's going to happen to you. So what do? Free speech zones. You're so not allowed. Oh, yeah. And now it's like, you know, this you have to be here thing is not really working out. Free speech zone thing. That's just, you know, that's not really working out. It's kind of like the, you know, color threat level crap. You know, it's like, oh, we got a threat in Miami, so the whole country's on red alert or something. I'm like, seriously? You know, I made a lot of fun of that. I've had Homeland Security guys on, and I just like, you know, seriously? You came on my show. But what happened was, is that is the same kind of attitude that we're having towards all this kind of police state stuff. It's just, I don't, next. Well, you must pay attention to us. And they'll start coming after you whenever you kind of, the tighter your fist, the more star systems that leak between your fingers. Well, we're going to go find and track down those damn star systems. All right. Let's go ahead and, look at, the news here. Levison stressed that he has complied with upwards of 24 court orders. Now, this is on the LavaBit encrypted private email thing that Snowden was using. So that kind of bothered me. Okay, he's like, you give me a court order, I'd do it. But this time, it's just that the order he received more recently was markedly different, requiring him to cooperate and brought a broadly based surveillance that would scoop up information about all the users of his service. He likened the demands to a requirement to install a tap on his telephone. It sounds like the feds were asking for a full-on backdoor on the system, not unlike some previous reports of ISPs who have received surprise visits from the NSA, like Google. Well, let me tell you what happened. The reason they did this, they even created this thing, was because he saw that, let me see if I got it in here. He was saying that the reason they started LavaBit was because of all of the surveillance that was done by Gmail. Because I remember when this first started, you get a Gmail account. The only reason I have a Gmail is when I'm on the road. But everything that I have on my private email forwards to my Gmail account. And that's why, so if I don't open it or whatever, it goes into Gmail so I can access when I'm on the road or I'm out of the office, whatever. And so it opens up everybody to everything, Vinny and everything. And I'm like, it can never be secret enough. And unless you just, talking in someone's ear, and even then you don't even know anymore. But so I'm just like open about everything because, what else are you going to do? And so I can see the benefit of being secret and clandestine and it's private and bite me. But, for what I do, I'm much better off being very open about stuff. So that's my, savior, I guess, there is just, you don't need to tap me because I'll tell you. Matter of fact, I'll spend hours telling you. Sit on down. Let me tell you everything, So this is what prompted LavaBit. Was because Gmail, when you were doing emails, I give you an example. Yes, I'm going over. Yeah, I'll be over for poker tonight, my friend, so on, kind of whatever. And yes, and boom, Gmail. When he responds back to me and I open it up, in my Gmail email from them, there would be ads for gaming retailers on my way from my address to his house. In between are all the places that have been listed on there, or those that did the AdWord thing, or just any and everybody, whatever. I get all these gaming places that I could stop by to get poker chips or, cards or dartboards or whatever the heck on my way to him because it said something about poker in the email. It was an advertising thing. But the man wants to have that, okay? So I'm going, wow. So they knew that once they're collecting this kind of data and reading your emails in real-time communication, selling kind of whatever, that the man's going to say, thank you very much. Well, they didn't want to, have that accessible to the man. So what they did is they started their own thing. We don't do that. And we save and encrypt and do whatever the heck the service was that Snowden was using. Well, if Snowden was using it, well, the man's like, oh, hell, we never even heard of that, or whatever. Well, they used to think like Hotspot was supposed to be, clandestine and, all these other, it's like, seriously, right. So this is the fact that he did. He goes, I know what they wanted me to do. I shut it down. That pissed him off. And they need to set a standard. No, you must be a spy for, the guy with the shiny badge. Okay, then we have Reuters reporting the British authorities forced the Guardian newspaper to destroy material leaked by Edward Snowden, its editor has revealed, calling it a pointless move that would not prevent further reporting on U.S. and British surveillance programs. But then you think about what did WikiLeaks do? 400 gigabyte download of encrypted material. You download it, and then you wait for the encryption.
There are those that just want to be left alone, and those that just won't leave them alone. Which one are you? The Ernest Hancock Show.
We're behind the curtain. The meetings of they, them, us. It's their encrypted speech. The code. What they got planned for you. And the decoding is... You know, the one thing, I want to show you is this. I thought it was 400 megabytes. I don't know what, you know, it's 400 gigabytes of encrypted insurance data online from WikiLeaks. Now, when they went and started doing this shutting down, you're not allowed, and Guardian, kind of what happened, all of a sudden WikiLeaks says, you know what? Here is a download, okay? Download it all. It's all encrypted. Doesn't mean anything. Those of you that know how encryption or PGP email works, let me explain, you know, how I understand it. I know somebody was screaming I did it wrong, but, you know, this is how I understood it from the mid-90s, what happens. You take data, an email, anything that you can encrypt, you pound on keys, you install the software on your computer, and you go bam, 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 bam on your keyboard, and it starts and creates, you know, however many bit encryption. I send out a public key, and sometimes you see at the bottom of people's emails all these characters and so on. It'd probably be, you know, 10, 20 lines of characters, and it's just, you know, blah, blah, blah. That is, there's a public and a private key. If I send it out, okay, with the public key encryption, only when I send out the other part of that that you use to decrypt it, can you decrypt that. So I send it out. The NSA will spend a 15 gazillion years trying to decrypt whatever. And then you go, all right, it's just sitting there. Everybody's got it downloaded. It's already done. It's already done. 400 gigabytes. People are already downloading this. It's done. But it's just a bunch of gobbledygook on their hard drive by the thousands, the tens of thousands, the hundreds of thousands, the millions. They don't know. So they have this sitting there. And they go, all right, insurance policy. Bing, pushed a button. There goes the private key through 15 gazillion outlets of De La Facebook, you know, and they, you know, they're Twitter, whatever, you know, they get it and you put the link on there and boom, they decrypt it and there's all the data. You're going, are you sure you want to play this game? Are you sure you want to play this game? They do. All right. So WikiLeaks puts that out there and you got other senators. Oh, we need to drone Assange. You know, we need to take out the Ecuadorian embassy and, you know, and the United Kingdom and just kind of so we can get Julian and whatever as if it's one person. It's just icons. You know, it doesn't matter. It's already done. This is how empires die. They die in the minds of the people. Everybody keeps thinking it's some kind of, it's like a battleground to take. You know, like it's out there somewhere. Like there's some hill to occupy or something. What happens if people just take control of their own minds? Then what? I don't know. It's a first step. I guarantee freaking to you that. So that's where we put our focus. And we learn things of how to survive these guys. So we go to this. Here we go. 400 gigabytes. Man, 400 megabytes is enough in just text. I mean, this must be a bunch of movies and stuff, too, or something. Damn. The data can't be read without an encryption key, but the movement supporters say that could be published later in case anything happens to leading Leaky Weeks figures. The whistleblowing organization published links for a massive 400 gigabytes worth of encrypted data it described as insurance documents on its Twitter and Facebook accounts. It is possible to download the files, but advanced encoding prevents them from being opened. The group described encryption as a necessary measure in light of previous attempts to block its leaking of classified information. The practice of encoding data and then later releasing the key is not uncommon for WikiLeaks, but the sheer size of the files has attracted considerable attention. WikiLeaks followers on Facebook and Twitter speculated on what the documents might contain, and also that the key would be released if anything should happen to WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange or NSA whistleblower Edward Snowden. Now, will they be able to track every single individual that downloaded it? Maybe. You know, they do, you know, whatever. You know, do we take and put the encryption files on Freedom's Phoenix servers? Yeah, maybe. You know, do I care? I don't really need to. That's, you know, jumping in front of a steamroller. But, you know, it's already done. You know, this is what the big bad guy, they, them, those don't get. You know, you're not going to get away from information. It's out of the bag. The horses have left the barn. This whole capability of being able to share whatever needs to be shared is over. You don't have monopoly anymore. The best you get is spin. The best you get is the talking heads on the morning shows going blah, 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 blah. And now we have for the first, you know, the lowest, lowest, lowest of the lowest low ratings of the Sunday morning TV shows, the news where they get out, you know, the guy said in the quotes for the next week's worth of newspaper, somebody says whatever. Nobody watches the shows anymore. Nobody reads the newspaper stuff anymore. Nobody gives a crap what they say other than to quote them and say how stupid they are. And you go on places like Freedom's Phoenix and others and say, look, you want our 1,000 words? Here's the graphic. And it's that simple. So I'm just going, you know, what? Seriously, that's why I don't spend so much time on this. You have to understand from my perspective, I already know where this goes. It gets bad. You know, so what do? You prepare yourself so it doesn't affect you as much, that you can protect yourself and your family. You learn different skills and things. Aquadome. Lab battery. You know, Harvest Festival that we're doing, going to Libertopia, Bitcoin, you share with that, you know, all this stuff. We have what we're working on now. Alma is putting together an ad that'll go. We have a space deck, and you know, you guys probably haven't seen it. It's only a couple times I may have used it, but we have the capacity to put a big giant ad at the top of Freedom's Phoenix. It can be as however high as I want, big, and we're going to be doing Freedom's Phoenix on the road and all the stuff that we're doing and the newspaper coming out, and we're going to have a big montage of all the activities that's just coming up in the next couple of months and what's going on now, where you can click on different parts of it and see the updates on everything, because it's just overwhelming, all the stuff that we're doing, and a lot of it's coming. We got a lot of irons in the fire, and it's all starting to come together, and it's because we're setting a timeline. I mean, it's kind of, and you don't have to force it, you know, just things naturally come together or they don't. And you know, it looks like about everything's coming together before the end of the year, but it looks like probably October, in October, beginning November, because November, December, I try and kind of, you know, coast and, you know, do family thing. We still run everything. We still do the show and all that kind of stuff, but I'm not, you know, trying to occupy every waking moment. I'm sewing. I've been sewing for 3 days. Sewing. I mean, you know, like sewing machine sewing, you know, the cover and nice colors and did the swashes, and I programmed myself to dream about my Aquadome. Okay. And, you know, getting the coloring and so on. And I got some of it up there, but I'm not going to show you because it's not done yet. You know, I still got a, you know, little darting here and, you know, pinning here and changing and doing and new panels and everything. And I get it done and poof, and you'll go, wow, now I see the vision, you know. So a lot of guys, nobody does. I mean, you know, because it's in my head. So, but we're going to have fun with that. I am, you know, trying to be positive on this because I don't know what else to do. I mean, then you're screaming for the steamroller to stop. Stop. Well, you know, it's like, look, I'm going to be standing on the side. Look, this guy's screaming stop, and this guy's going to run him over. They ran him over. That was bad. Look at the greasy spot on the warehouse floor. Now what? Don't get in front of a steamroller. You know, don't stand on the railroad tracks with your head on the rail. You know, as you're listening, here it comes. Yeah, I don't know when I see it, and splat. I mean, wow. Is that, you know, I know some people do that. Some people need to do that. They want to sit on the railroad track as it goes over and chops legs. I've seen a guy do that. Some environmental guy or whatever, and the train just rolled right over him, chopped his legs off right there. I'm like, okay. Don't even remember the cause. Don't remember the guy's name. Don't remember. I remember him getting run over. And I'm like, seriously? You didn't think that? You thought that train was going to, like, stop on a dime or something? I'm just, I'm, you know, I got a more positive outlook.
We know you're out there. We can feel you now. We know that you're afraid. You're afraid of us. You're afraid of change. We don't know the future. We aren't here to tell you how this is going to end. We're here to tell you how it's going to begin. We're going back to editing the next edition of Freedom's Phoenix Digital Magazine now, where we are telling the people what you don't want them to know. We're showing them a world without you, a world without rules and controls, without borders or boundaries, a world where anything is possible. Where we go from there is a choice we leave to you. Subscribe at freedomsphoenixeasy.com. That's freedoms with an S, phoenixeasing.com.
What's up next? Visit the Liberty Radio Network program guide to find out at shows.lrn.fm. That's shows.lrn.fm.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
That means you can go 672 miles on a tank of gas. Now, I know what you gearheads are thinking. Sure, it gets this crazy gas mileage, but I bet it can't go over 50 miles an hour on a downhill run, right? Wrong. Helio has a top speed of over 100 miles an hour. When was the last time you drove over 100 miles an hour? Thought so. But let's say you persist and you go down the route of, well, it's probably made of some cheap, flimsy plastic material. Wrong again. Helio's panels are made of a strong composite material designed to take whatever the open road throws at you. And guess what? So does the rest of the vehicle. Helio features a reinforced roll cage, 3 airbags, disc brakes with an anti-lock braking system, 3-point harness safety restraints, and 50% larger crush zones. How about we go inside and take a look around? The first thing you notice is that it has a back seat, so you can take your kid to school where you'll be a big hit with his or her friends, or as most of us do, use the back seat to throw your stuff. The back seat also folds down, so you can have more room if you want to use the trunk space for larger items like golf clubs, extra groceries, you get the idea. But back to the driver's seat. You'll notice that Helio offers everything a traditional car, SUV, or truck does. A standard AM/FM stereo, a standard air conditioning and heating system, and standard power windows and door lock. The driver's seat and the whole area is very roomy. That's because Helio was designed to fit more than 95% of the population, which is just about everybody. Except maybe that one strange uncle we all seem to have. Helio can be ordered with either a manual or optional automatic transmission. But enough talk. How about we go for a ride?
Okay, now this Helio vehicle is only, guess how much? $6,800, and they want to produce it at an abandoned GM factory in Texas, I think, somewhere or whatever. Mike Crosswhite, one of the guys, the 0 point free energy, better high tech Tesla guy, he already put a down payment on it. And it's supposed to be ready by this next summer. So it's like 9-10 months. $6,800. And this is, 600-something mile range, 84 miles to the gallon. And that's a gas, I think it's a 3-cylinder gas engine. So I'm going, this is going to be a hybrid. You know this eventually has some electric and battery, and you know. But what's happening? The industry, man, they're not going to be grins and giggles about this thing. So what did we find out about what's going on with the Tesla? In Virginia, in West Virginia, whatever, and same thing here in Arizona, the auto industry got some kind of deal to where manufacturers, it is illegal for them to sell their vehicle to people. Illegal. You must go through franchise dealerships. And you got to ask, why? Well, because they can. Special interest, lobbyists, de la, whatever. To protect themselves, the dealerships, they are their biggest, certainly, local lobby. Now, let me give you an example. If you look at your newspaper, the local newspaper, what were the ads that you see? I don't know about your area, but here in freaking Arizona, it's developers, auto dealerships. It's all about real estate, auto dealerships. Big, giant, full-page ads, auto dealerships. They got plenty of money to be spreading around. We need us a law. And in the interest of whatever the law, we got to have a law. You can't just order Amazon cars. If you get a new car, it has to go through a dealership. Now, Tesla doesn't have dealerships. You know, they like, yeah, you order it, here it comes off, take it. You know, Elon Musk is, you know, kind of a PayPal and computer internet kind of duh. You know, go order it, buy it, get it, whatever. So you can't sell it there. You go to Scottsdale Fashion Square. It's a big upscale, you know, Saks, Neiman Marcus kind of thing. And you go there, and they have a Tesla showroom, but you can't buy. And you only get trinkets and trash and your Tesla keychain for $40 or whatever the heck. And, you know, a lot of the guys, they said, look, man, I went and I've sat in it, and it is the coolest thing ever. You need to go and co. You know, the entire dashboard is a big iPad. I mean, you know, whatever. So I'm going, okay, I should go by and report on it, and, you know, maybe I get to sit and touch and feel. I don't know if you get to take a test drive, but I have other friends that have taken test drives. They go to Vegas, and they'll have them there, and they're part of a party, and, you know, I guess if you go to this certain party, you got enough money to buy a Tesla, I guess. So they go in, and they say, hey, I mean, I'll give it a shot. They drive it around. Wow. Massive acceleration, no noise. Now, some people may, you know, want some noise, but I remember one hybrid they had. Who was it? I think it was an option they had in the Fiero a long time when I bought a Fiero. That was a big mistake. And they had, you know, the speakers in the headrest, and you would able to put in a cassette or a tape or something that had car noises that it was tuned to the engine. Somehow something went into the speakers where you go vroom, 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 make you feel better, you know. You know, so I guess everybody else didn't have to hear it. But so this is they augment the sounds for the driver as opposed to everybody else. But that a lot of the guys, that's not good enough. No, we gotta wake up the neighborhood kind of thing. Here I come with my Harley. So I'm, yeah. It's like South Park. They did the Harley guy. You know, all the Harley guys need to pay attention to us, you know, with their trombones. So I can see where this goes already. If you watched the movie with, what was his name? It's one of the brothers. He's a famous actor. He played the big bad guy in Iron Man 1, you know, War Machine. What was his name? Anyway, he played the Tucker, you know, the movie about Tucker after World War II, where they came out with a new vehicle is going to rival everybody. And kind of when you got a car, it comes out, you know, it gets 80 something miles to the gallon, can go over 100 miles an hour, got a little pep to it, and it's kind of cool, and it's just $6,800. Guess what? Oh, heck no. You know, this, so we'll see what happens with that. We'll be paying attention. Now, the other thing that I wanted to show you is also this. There is, and we've covered this before. Now, this is a plane that it's hard to, you know, understand how cool this thing is. And I remember during development, they were doing this. It is a plane that has the ability to take off on land and water, that you land it on water, the gear goes down, and you just power it up onto the loading ramp. And you put it on your trailer, take it home, the wings fold back, goes in your garage. And this is a nice, I think it's under $200,000. I mean, it's not free, but, you know, it's under what they call a light sport plane. You get in, it has to have a stalling speed of under 45 miles an hour. So it's kind of, you know, you get it up there and it just kind of, you know, floats and then boom, and, you know, drops in. But you can go zinging around on the lakes on the water, you know, with your jet ski friends, you know, and it has platforms you can get up on, you know, and you take a trailer at home and you go out and you go fly. And I go, this is the coolness of the cool, the definitely cool here for Arizona. You can go wherever you want. There's plenty of lakes and rivers around. You just out in the middle of the desert, so you just go chill. This is very, 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 very cool. And I found out that to get the license to fly this is only a few thousand dollars and you can take passengers. So I go, wow. Let's listen a little bit.
Land on the water is a functional thing. You actually land on the water, you can blast around, have fun.
And you're just, you know, going left and right, and I'll go over there, and we'll, you know, mosey up to the beach there, and we'll go and we'll land. And it has full instrumentation.
See the V here, it's really pronounced. The airplane can land. It's designed for up to 18-inch waves. And we've had it out in the water, and it handles rough water exceptionally well. Now, I mean, big waves, you can't take it out of, but where you take
now, a version of this plane was on the cover about 5 months ago on our magazine. You know, the one where young Arizona, we settle in a valley and kind of whatever. Now, the way the wings on our version, it was jet-powered or turboprop, and it had the engines were next to where the wings fold up so it could do vertical takeoff and landing. And it had props in the horizontal stabilizer in the back. And we just kind of did a modern version of this to where it could be, you know, vertical takeoff and landing. They just, you know, put it up to the trailer and, you know, take off, fold the wings back. Done. This is the future. There's so much coming that puts us out of the hands and reach. Where can you live on this? On the shore of a distant whatever the heck? You know, you commute into San Francisco Bay to go to work from out in international waters 12 miles. You get it? Do you feel me? You know, this is the future, and the bad guys, they just, you know, all they got to do is just not be so bad. They can be part of it and glean a little bit more for another generation, but no. It's got to be that which is not forbidden is required, and here they come, and they're losing the position that they need more importantly than anywhere else in our minds. And once you abandon that, then what? Now you just got to survive them. Who else is going to survive? I don't know. Me, mine, those I love, friends, you. You know, I vote that. You're going to make me vote, I vote you survive. Next hour, James Bovard. We're going to find a lot more stuff out.
More Declare Your Independence is coming up next, live, after the news, here on the Liberty Radio Network, LRN.FM.
Tuesday, August 20th, 2013. 1 ounce of silver is $24. 1 Bitcoin is $119. Peace News Now is brought to you in part by Friends of WeUseCoins.com. The following story is brought to you by the Sons of Liberty Mint. Trade value for value with fine silver quarters from the Sons of Liberty Mint. 4 quarters to a troy ounce. The most divisible, usable silver on the planet. Order some today at sonsoflibertymint.com. In September 2012, longtime farmer Alvin Schlangen was acquitted in Hennepin County on 3 charges alleging violations of the state food and dairy code, including a charge of operating without a food handler's license. After a successful legal battle, he went back to working on his farm. Last week, the state dragged Schlangen back into court again, this time in a new county, facing 5 more charges related to feeding his community. Schlangen offered members of the private buying club, Freedom Farms Co-op, the benefit of his volunteer delivery service as he picked up members' food items, including raw milk, from other farms and delivered it along with products from his Freeport farm. The criminal charges brought against Schlangen in Stearns County included operating without a food handler's license, storing eggs at temperatures above the mandated 45 degrees, distributing adulterated or misbranded food, violating a food embargo, and selling custom-processed meat. Alvin faced up to $5,000 in fines and up to 15 months in jail. During the trial, the prosecution spent the first day calling witnesses, including the state veterinarian, who testified about different foodborne illnesses to associate Schlangen with a foodborne illness. Yet the state did not present a shred of evidence that food delivered by Schlangen had ever made anyone sick. Attorney Nathan Hansen represented Schlangen with the support of Farm-to-Consumer Legal Defense Fund. Sentenced only on the charge of handling food without a license, Schlangen was fined $1,000, $700 of the fine was suspended, and given a 90-day jail term, which was also suspended with 1 year on probation. If he violates probation, he will be sent to jail and will be required to pay the balance of $700 in fines. Pete Kennedy, attorney and president of the Farm-to-Consumer Legal Defense Fund, said, quote, "It's a sad day when a hardworking farmer who has dedicated his life to feeding his community quality food and benefited the health of hundreds of families is judged to be a criminal." The Minnesota Department of Agriculture did not have this case brought against Alvin to protect the public health. The department's purpose was to get control over the private distribution of food, denying Minnesota's residents their right to obtain the food of their choice from the source of their choice. This tactic used to be called double jeopardy, and the Fifth Amendment to the U.S. Constitution strictly forbids it, stating that no person shall be subject to the same offense to be put twice in jeopardy of life or limb, apparently except when you've embarrassed the state.
And now, live from the studios of Freedom's Phoenix, Ernest Hancock.
Believe me when I say we have a difficult time ahead of us. But if we are to be prepared for it, we must first shed our fear of it. I stand here without fear because I remember. I remember that I am here not because of the path that lies before me, but because of the path that lies behind me. I remember that for 100 years we have fought these machines. And after a century of war, I remember that which matters most. We are still here! Let us make them remember. We are not afraid!
Independence of the Ernest Hancock here in Phoenix, Arizona, AA from the BEAUT full studios of Freedoms of the Nest, freedomsphoenix.com. I have Mr. James Bovard. Mr. James Bovard, let me tell you, I've known James for decades. I mean, the first time I met him was, I thought it was late 93. It says his book was published in 94, Lost Rights, The Destruction of American Liberty. But I think it was the end of 93 that he was here in the Valley. And I may have that wrong. We'll ask him. But I tell you, had a down big, you know, the Hilton, and we had a big luncheon, and he got to speak and do. And I think Bumper Hornberger was there, Future Freedom Foundation, some others. And it was all about, yay, somebody put it in a freaking book. All this stuff, accumulation, and then from then on, it's just book after book after book. Oh, they're bad. They're bad. You know, we have his most recent one, 2012, Public Policy Hooligan. We'll talk about that. Attention Deficit Democracy, 2006. We gave that to a lot of our liberal friends, and Charles and I were over at Air America and so on. We're like, here. You know, read some James Bovard. Then they go do Lost Rights. Then they go, and you're like, they're cured. You know what I mean? So once you get to where you have all this information, then what? He's written for the New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Playboy, Washington Post, New Republic, Reader's Digest, blah, 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 blah. Had his books translated into Spanish, Arabic, Japanese, and Korean. You know, a contributing editor for American Conservative Magazine and the Freeman, a regular contributor to the Future of Freedom Magazine, and on Freedom's Phoenix, I give you Mr. James Bovard. Hello.
Hey, Ernie. Thanks for your kind words. Thanks for having me back on your fine show.
Thank you. Okay, now this is the one thing that, you know, we can talk about a lot of things. I mean, you know, let's talk about, you know, the Hooligan book, okay? Go ahead and tell us what that's about, and, you know, pump that up, and we'll go ahead and, Donna, you know, we'll go have it put up on the site here and Amazon and everything, and go get your book. Go ahead and tell me about Hooligan.
All right. Thanks, Ernie. The Hooligan book is memoir essays about how I got so cussed, I guess. The experiences I had that shaped me, that made me very wary of government and political power. Some of my run-ins with government from the time I was, like, you know, 5-6 years old. And some of the books I read, my experience after dropping out of college, my experience being busted on false armed robbery charges when I was 17, some of the hitchhiking adventures, damn near got killed a few times, got some good stories out of them, living in different places. It talks about the path-breaking work I did at the Harvard Business School. I was employed there as a snow shoveler after a big storm in 1978. and all kinds of other jobs, Santa Claus, things like that. I had a piece in USA Today last week where I talked about how my experience in high school working along with a convict road gang. I talked to some of the black guys here about how they've been busted on drug charges, helped make me very wary of the war on drugs when I was 16.
I read that article. I thought that was interesting perspective.
Well, you know,
I knew it was crap from the beginning.
Well, there were probably some people who saw that article and thought that, yeah, you know, I bet Bovard was actually one of the convicts.
Well, it was a, it was a summer. Yeah, how did you wind up working alongside the chain gang?
It was part of the terms of my probation.
Oh, so there was a probation thing.
I'm making a joke, Ernie. Come on.
Okay.
It was, you know, the State Highway Department there was had a few openings for, you know, local kids, and so I applied and I got the job. I'd spent the two previous summers working in a peach orchard, which was, I had a supervisor there who'd spent 20 years as an Army drill sergeant. And he was unforgettable because he would always talk like he had a mouthful of peach pits. And he'd all like, Randy, you got all there, do that. I said, what did you say? You know, how wise are you the hell over there? And so, you know, I mean, the thing I always heard from that job and most of my subsequent jobs is, what the hell is wrong with you, Red? So anyhow, so the highway department was nice. It paid a lot better. And I didn't have to work.
Alongside the chain gang. Now, this is interesting perspective that you know, kind of what made you, all the stuff that you write about, the injustice of that. Oh, let me do this. I want to ask you this question. There was a doctor came on and kind of, you know, an activist, so on. He's talking about these different personality tests, and the bottom line was that libertarians and the people that do, you know, just, you know, rise up against the injustice and write about kind of things like you do, is I'm going, they have this sense of justice. You know, they just kind of, you know, there needs to be some justice. It needs to be balance. It needs to be, you know, can't just let it go. And it's kind of a personality trait. Are you finding that kind of describes you? It's a justice thing?
Well, I had one of those personality tests when I was in my late teen years, and the results came back and said I was an asshole.
By their standards.
I'm not sure on that. I mean, sense of justice is part of it, but also it's an issue of a bullshit radar. I mean, so many folks, there are some folks who I think almost instinctively have a BS radar, and things just kind of percolate in their minds, and all of a sudden they start recognizing, well, a lot of what I learned in public school is BS, you know, a lot of what the military is doing BS. You got President Nixon, Ford, Carter, you know, all a bunch of darn liars and, you know, fools. And this stuff adds up year after year. And you're just thinking, now, wait a minute, you know, there's so much of what I've been taught and so much of what I've been told is complete nonsense. What the heck is going on? And why are more people not seeing this? And I guess early on I had a faith that if more people would see the facts of the matter of what the government was doing, people would get a better appreciation of the need for their own liberty.
Did they?
Some have. Dozens have.
Yeah, dozens.
Maybe hundreds.
It needs to be, you know, I'm glad you did it. I mean, you know, it's been useful for us in a lot of ways. It's like, you know what, read this and then talk to me. You know, I mean, seriously, I don't got time. Hooligan, we have it up. You go to today's archive, Tuesday, August 20th. Into today's radio show, and you'll see all the links. You just click, boom, Amazon, get. Because, you know, Hooligan, I know what it's about. It's kind of why I'm this. I read parts of, you know, the summary and everything, and I got the book, and it's on, the, you know, the stack of I get to go on vacation and read. And I tell you, this is a as you look through it, it's kind of an understanding of where James comes from and why. And, you know, these books that you've written, they've had different kind of impact. When you do Bush Betrayal or you do the Clinton book, you know, I Feel Your Pain or whatever it was, you have, you know, these two different books. Each time the opposition paints you as being, you know, the other guy when you're really, I don't know, what are you? I mean, other than just libertarian, anger, leave me aloneist. I mean, you know, what is it that you tell both sides as they, you know, different ones attack you depending on which administration you're criticizing?
Well, you know, I've always tried to pass myself off as a moderate. you know, I'm basically libertarian on most issues. You know, there's the old saying that the Constitution isn't perfect, but it's better than what we've got now. You know, there's a lot of good things in the Constitution, which I wish we could go back to. But there's really almost nobody I've got faith in public life right now. So, I don't know. It's frustrating that folks seem to be processing information of government outrages less well now than they did even 20 years ago. And you might have experienced the same thing. For instance, with Obama, there's been so much BS the last couple years.
You know, when we come back, we'll go ahead and talk about, you know, some of the abuses that are happening, certainly in the Obama administration. I mean, back when you used to think there's no way it could get worse than the Bush administration. Seriously. All these wars and everything and the debt and the deficit, and we have there's no way. National socialization of the economy with the TARP and this, you know, there's no way it could possibly get worse. And then it got worse.
This is Donna Hancock with Brangus Realty in Arizona. Now more than ever, we have to seek out good investments to help secure our future. The real estate market across the country today seems to have recovered. Inventories are low, housing prices have gone up over the past year, and money is available to lend. But you must be careful to read between the lines of what the mainstream news is reporting. There is a shadow inventory, and the market is manipulated by a multiple number of factors. And we will need to anticipate this flux and prepare for the next market downturn in housing. There are many communities across the country today that have a growing mindset of preparing to ride out the financial storm. And Arizona is one of those places. If you are interested in moving to the desert southwest, where we have 3 to 4 growing seasons a year, and the sun is readily available for anything solar, I will be here to help you when that time comes. Feel free to use my webpage at donnahancock.com to search for Arizona properties that are of interest to you. And please, feel free to call me at 602-828-1819 to discuss options for your move to Arizona.
If you enjoy LRN.FM, please contribute to your favorite shows via their websites and become an amplifier at amp.lrn.fm. That's amp.lrn.fm.
To be a part of the show, call 602-264-2800. 602-264-2800. And now, Ernest Hancock.
Baby. Yeah, we got James Bovard on. You know, this is the Wall Street Journal called Bovard the roving inspector general of the modern state. New York Times tagged him an anti-czar czar. And Washington Post columnist George Will called him a one-man true squad. And we call him our friend here on Freedom's Phoenix and Declare Your Independence with me, Ernest Hancock. Now, I want to make sure we get into this Greenwald thing and so on. The story is that, you know, what they call it, Whitehall or something, you know, MI, whatever the heck, in the United Kingdom, came over and they've been for weeks saying, look, you better not, you had your fun, stop doing it, it's time to quit, you got to quit, don't publish anymore, stop, as the steamroller's coming. So what happened was is they go, no, we really, really mean it, and yeah, we really, really know. So what they did is they go in, smash all the hard drives as if, you know, that was going to stop it. I don't know what the hell they were thinking. Then WikiLeaks does a 400 gigabyte download as an insurance policy. Gee, I wonder if that has something to do with, you know, all this data. And all of a sudden they go, you know, Greenwald is in Brazil, right? I mean, and most of our stuff is being done from New York. I'm just like, wow, it's like these guys are always fighting the last war. They don't, because it's the British thing, because they can't. Explain this British mentality to me, James. I mean, what do you know about this? It's like the king and queen say, and thou shalt, and we rule you. I mean, what is their attitude on this stuff?
I don't have any deep insights in the British mentality, but the British government seems to have a lot more sway and arbitrary power than the U.S. does, or at least the U.S. had until recently. There's so much deference there. There are so many prerogatives they have. We have got a much stronger tradition of press freedom here. We have a real Bill of Rights, at least on paper. And I was surprised at the details of the government agents going in smashing those hard drives. I wonder if they missed the copies of the hard drives, but that's another story.
They don't care. It was just a show of cuz.
Well, the thing which I would hope the Guardian would have done is somehow film the smashing of the hard drives. Because something like that would be do very well on YouTube.
Oh no, they're going to, you know, I'm sure a YouTube guy will come up with a reenactment anyway.
That's
true. It doesn't
true.
Matter. I mean, you know, it's just doesn't matter. It just doesn't matter.
Well,
you know,
it's interesting to see the arrogance of these folks, and the same with Obama. Obama's been out there making so many ludicrous false statements on this. There was a columnist in Salon that said, "Gee, maybe he's lying to us." I'm thinking, like, no shit, Bob.
Well, this is the point that I'm trying to make. I'm going, okay, when it gets to the point that the people just, they abandon not just this government, not just this administration, not just, but like previous and previous and previous and previous, and you find this goes back to freaking forever, and you go, you know, it's like inherent in government, we rule you shiny badge people to begin with. Once they start to come to that conclusion, then they're like, you know, that which governs least governs best and not at all is the best. I mean, you know, so I'm just wondering, you know, at what point, where's your line? You know, we got to have government, but it just does what? I mean,
well, I mean, this is something which I've wrestled with as well to try to understand better. I mean, there were so many times after 9/11 that I thought that the Bush administration had gone too far, you know, with the bogus, obviously ludicrous justification for invading Iraq. Then the torture scandal stuff came out. Then the surveillance scandal stuff came out with the New York Times, James Risen stuff. And each time I thought, okay, now they've gone too far. Now there's going to be a broad-based backlash. Every time I was wrong. I was overly optimistic about how the American people would react to the government abuses. And I've been amazed at how little outrage there's been about the NSA stuff here. I mean, President Obama was over there in Germany. He had the Germans massively out in the street raising hell about this. There was an anti-NSA rally I went to on July 4th in downtown D.C. And, you know, it was a nice rally. They had some very good speakers. They had, you know, dozens, maybe 200 people show up. But it was a very mild, respectful rally. And there just didn't seem to be much anger. And it's like, I'm just amazed that the government can vacuum up everybody's email and people will say, well, I wish they wouldn't have done that.
Now, let me give you my perspective.
Okay.
I see this. I've been down, you know, nose grindstone on this for a long time. You've known me. And I tell you, what I see is they go, duh. What'd you think was great? I had Shahid Batar from the Defense of Rights Committee.
Bill of Rights Defense Committee.
Right, in Washington there. And when the story first broke, it was like, you know, midweek, Wednesday, Thursday, and had him on like Thursday. Uh-huh. And he goes, it's admitted they found us. No, this guy did. He goes, oh, my God. And what do you have? Donna, we have Verizon, right? Yeah, we got Verizon. And he goes, no, they're hacking. They're reading everything, doing everything. I go, Donna, they're reading everything. She goes, I thought we already knew that. I go, yeah, we already knew that. Now what? You know, because we released that. We wrote about this in 2008. This wasn't like a secret.
Yeah, and there was a USA Today story that broke in May of 2006 that exposed a lot of the stuff that was going on.
You know, you go, yeah, well, it's nice that they admit it. I go, okay, whatever. See, the point that I'm making is that the people already know. They've already, you know, yeah, I get it. I go to my kids when they're doing MySpace and giving their favorite color and their best friends and pictures of them, whatever the heck. And I go, you know, there's some CIA guy sitting there, you know, wringing his hands going, wah, ha, 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 and thanking you for filling out all his blanks on his profile thing. You know that, right? You know, and then you got Rupert Murdoch buys MySpace for $300-something million. Why? For the metadata. You know what I mean? I'm going, you know, what do you think was that was worth for? It was like, you know, oh, my God, I got the entire Generation Next and their profiles and favorite, you know, sayings and quotes of and books read and movies and songs. I mean, are you freaking kidding me? Yeah, of course, this is of enormous value. Just ask Zuckerberg. So I'm going, this, do you understand? Yes, they do. They do. They kind of complete understanding. Let me tell you what the secret is. They don't care. It's not that they, you know, think it's a good thing. They're just like, yeah, you know, they don't care. And I go, why don't you care? And they go, because I don't care what they think of what I think. I just don't care until they start kicking in the doors and doing whatever. Well, now they're starting to see that that's coming. Now what? You want them in the street? Get wrapped up in the orange netting? I mean, what are you looking for the people to do?
Write letters to their congressman.
Are you serious?
No, I'm not. I'm not that gullible. You know, I don't know what the most effective response would be.
Ignore them!
Well, I don't know that works that well.
All right, well, what do you do?
I don't have a silver bullet answer.
You know, my thing is you just declare your independence between the ears. I break with thee, I break with thee. It's a revolution between the ears. And then you start making decisions and moving your assets and your efforts and everything towards preparing for the... You don't go and get a $100,000 debt to get a sheepskin that gives you no job. You actually learn how to dig a ditch, lay pipe, and, you know, and mason some bricks. I mean, you know, you actually learn something. You go out and grow food. You start raising your children. You pull them out of the government schools. You start making these decisions that have a positive impact on actually how you're going to live free. Let me tell you how you live free. By living free. You can't be independent if you're dependent on the system. Quit being dependent. All of a sudden, the mind fog lifts and you understand. And it helps if you read James Bovard's books because they got it all detailed out for you.
Rhodes? It's the Ernest Hancock Show. Where we're going, there aren't any roads.
Yeah, you can feel them coming. They're doing the zombie march. All the bureaucrats. You know, that's one thing Davy Barker is writing on... You know, the zombie genre he's doing for, you know, like 10 to 14-year-olds. And his whole deal is this. He goes, you know, when the virus or whatever chemicals or something that makes you into, you know, I need brain zombie. You know, the bureaucrats, the bullies, the law enforcement that use more of the primal part of the brain and less of their reasoning cortex, they're like the head zombies. You know, and he says the zombie genre is one thing that's different. It's instead of where it's always you have the one monster or the few monsters against all the people, it's like all of the zombies against the one or the few people. And so, you know, it's like, you know, the zombies are the government, man, and they're about to have the same mentality. I mean, seriously. So the one thing that I wanted to bring up, you know, and ask James about is that when they do Facebook and MySpace and LinkedIn and Twitter, and I tell you who's a perfect example, is my family. My niece, my younger sister's daughter, it's about 26, 27, around in there, she sees the internet as her online resume. And I mean, it is perfect. All the best, a highly glossified, great high-res pictures, de la her career. You go look up her on the internet and damn. I mean, it is an online resume. Well, my kids, it's kind of the same thing. I mean, they put up their kids' pictures and this and that and everything, you know, and they kind of open with it. And it's gotten to that point because they're doing so much surveillance and going after. It's no longer a place to freely express yourself that the internet is now becoming an avatar. It is what you want to be out there. So I'm wondering how useful it is to the bad guys. I mean, I can put, you know, whatever the heck I want. And in fact, that's what the kids come. They know that this is happening. So what do? They self-censor and scrub it to do whatever the heck that they want and create this. But the reality is what? I see more and more the activists, they still have their little Facebook thing. They start to see it as a resume and it's more of an activist thing and that kind of deal. But their personal life, you don't really know them until you actually meet them. And they're starting to have more of the meetup kind of thing. You know, they'll go, they may use the internet to meet up, but they have personal relationships and a lot of their communication thing is done in person. It's going back. It's going back. Retro to get away from the man. What do you think of that, James? Are they going to get away from the man?
I think you're right. I think you've got a bit of a biased election as far as your kinfolk, because I assume that they're far more aware of the dangers of government surveillance than the average citizens, but it has been very surprising to me to see how people use a snow shovel just to heave all their personal life onto Facebook. And I'm kind of lost interest in the photos of what they had for dinner and their puppies. It was interesting. There was a brief period where there seemed to be a libertarian intellectual vitality, at least on a swath of Facebook, but. I mean, it seems as if the number of postings and stuff has just kind of doubled almost every few months, and it becomes more and more difficult to kind of see where the ideas are actually percolating.
Did you have an email account in the mid-90s?
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, did you belong to some of the discussion email list on various blah, blah, blah?
Very little, because that is kind of, it was, It was pretty thin. There was some very good stuff on some of those, but there was also just an awful lot of hot air and blast.
Yeah, no, debate raged. I mean, it was ideology versus ideology, the man's trolls and the libertarians, and it was, yeah, I think it kind of surprised and shocked them by how powerful libertarian philosophy was when it went head-to-head. And okay. It was when it did, it was like, boom, upside your head, and where your books came in handy, too. So I'm going, you know, you've been a big, giant influence in a lot of this online debate to begin with. But I'm telling you, you know, you're right. There's, you know, the vast majority of the people, they don't get it or don't have the intellectual or whatever. They got government schooled or whatever. But there is a significant portion of Generation Next that just from osmosis of what's happening around them, they understand what's going on. And it's no longer the treasure trove of information that the government has come to expect. And they need, that's why they want to have access to encrypted files of email, day law, you're not allowed to tell people thing. And I'm going, you know, it's too late. The horse is out of the barn, man. Where do you think this is going?
That's a good point, and I hope you're right that there is a very broad swath of Generation Next that is recognized as government BS and the peril of the political power. I haven't seen persuasive evidence of that yet, but there's a lot of things which I'm behind the curve on.
You know, I see it all the time. You know, I'm looking at, this is what you know when you win. This is when you win. This is when you win. When the redcoats come to your house, and they go, which way do they go? And you go, I don't know. Or you point the other way that they went, you know, or they wouldn't believe you anyway. You know, I'm just like, you know, that's when you win, when you're not actively supporting and helping the state because they need your cooperation. They demand it.
I agree.
You know? And what happens? You just go, I don't know. I forgot. I can't remember. Then what? That's where we're at.
Well, I hope you're right, and I hope there's a very broad base. I mean, a part of what has me... Well, part of the reason I'm not as optimistic as you are, I think back to 9/11 and the first 2 weeks after the terrorist attacks, the number of Americans who trusted government to do the right thing doubled. It was the biggest, sharpest increase in trust in government in modern history.
Do you think the same thing would happen again with another type event?
I don't know, but I didn't think it would happen last time. So,
yeah, you got to keep in mind, you know, from our perspective, the internet really didn't get really going until 2004. And 2002 was the first election cycle that everybody and their grandma had to have a web page, okay? And broadband wasn't real common. It was still a lot of people, most probably on dial-up. And then in 2004, when Howard Dean raised a bunch of money, you know, running for president, they went, whoa, 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 what the heck was that? You know, then all the liberal blogs came out in the 2006 election cycle, and here comes Pelosi kind of crap. And then by 2008 and the Ron Paul thing, they went, what the heck just happened? And this revolution was possible only because the internet was as mature as it was, and you started to do YouTube on internet. And that's when we started Freedom's Phoenix, within the summer of 05, because I knew we had this all in our heads back in 96. When the video hit the internet, it was all over. And I'm going, they've lost their credibility. So now what? The newspapers? I mean, anybody investing in a newspaper now? I mean, seriously. So where do you get most of your readership from? I mean, I would imagine your books and online. It's not like you have an expanding base and audience in the traditional print media, do you think?
You know, I don't know exactly where I'm picking up readers at this point. I've got some exposure in the newspapers, some in some magazines, and a fair amount on the internet. So I think you're right that the internet has had this huge impact, but I don't see how it has yet borne fruit for individual freedom.
In the minds of the individual. See, this is, what do you think? I'm going to vote myself free or something? I mean, what are you looking to happen? Is congressman going, you know, gosh, man, they slapped themselves in the head and said I could have had a V8 and go, thanks for bringing this up. I was being bad. I'm not going to be bad anymore. Do you really think Congress is in control? Do you think voting makes the difference? Do you think it's the, you know, the presidency or the judicial branch or the what? I mean, it's like, you know, Patrick Henry going, look, man, what happens when all three branches of government align against the rights of the individual? You wind yourself in a free speech zone. That's what happens. You know, I don't see government as a solution. You know, I mean, I wouldn't even say, they go, the big debate rage, and they go, Ernie, You know, what libertarian constitution would you write? I go, okay, here it goes. And I put, you know, just a blank in between two quotes. None. I vote none. Now what?
Okay. Well, flip side is you were very active on the Ron Paul, helping the Ron Paul campaign, not part of the Ron Paul campaign.
Oh, no. You never heard me say anything about voting. I haven't voted since 02.
Okay. It wasn't voting. It was more just kind of trying to wake people up to the alternative.
Yeah, no, I mean, I saw that, and I knew what Ron was going to do. He was going to embrace libertarianism, he was going to make it very clear and explain it to the people, and, you know, why I break with thee. And I was very much in support of people being able to express themselves. Yeah. That's what it was all about. Well, we'll get your response to that when we come back here in just a few minutes with James Bovard.
When it comes to investing in precious metals, you need a source you can trust who offers you choices and empowers you to maximize your wealth. That's where Roberts & Roberts Brokerage can help. Roberts & Roberts is a trusted name in precious metals. Since 1977, Roberts & Roberts has been providing you with the finest gold and silver bullion, coins, rounds, and bars at genuine and honest prices. They make it easy to invest in precious metals and work with you to suit your investment needs. In addition to offering gold and silver for sale for U.S. dollars, Roberts & Roberts Brokerage is now accepting Bitcoin in exchange for their quality precious metals products. To speak with a professional from Roberts & Roberts about investing in precious metals, call toll-free 800-874-9760. Write this number down, 800-874-9760. Visit Roberts & Roberts online at rrbi.co. That's rrbi.co. On behalf of Roberts & Roberts, here's hoping your day is as good as gold.
You're listening to the best liberty-oriented audio streamed around the clock, on the air, and online. This is the Liberty Radio Network at LRN.FM.
It's time for Declare Your Independence with Ernest Hancock.
Love is a burning thing, and it makes a fiery ring. Bound by wild desire, I fell into a ring of fire. I fell into a burning ring of fire.
Yeah, burning ring of fire. You know, as Mr. James Bovard felt that ring of fire, you know, I tell you what, the most powerful weapon against these guys, you know, is love is a big giant arrow in the quiver of activism. It's like, you know, I love you, man. You know, you can diffuse a whole bunch of stuff with just, you know, I love you, man, because it always comes down to individuals. It always comes down to individuals. It always comes down to individuals. And sooner or later, these individuals, they get, you know, ostracized at the checkout counter at the grocery store, and they don't feel good about themselves. But sooner or later, there's violence. Sooner or later, somehow. Sooner or later, it's the pushback. Sooner or later, or because it usually comes from the bad guys, because you just hide your stuff. You're not allowed to hide your stuff. When a tax collector came and you know it's got hidden and buried in the whatever and stuff and torturing the women, you know, where's our goodies kind of man, it always gets down to that. And sooner or later, the people press back. In what form? How does that happen? You know, how are we going to do that? Well, I mean, you know, some guy's looking at the history, writing about a lot of this stuff and the abuses of Mr. James Bovard might have an opinion. How do you think this is going to come out, man? What are we looking to prepare for?
Don't know, but certainly the comments you made earlier that people would be fools to bury themselves in debt for a lifestyle or whatever, that certainly leaves them in a very bad position to defend their own independence.
Well, these young guys, they're starting to do the Bitcoin thing. They're going, yeah, now what? And they're going, oh, no. You know, they can't allow you to be independent. They're just peacefully extracting themselves from the system, and they're like, no, you're not allowed to extract yourself from the system. Good slaves stay in the cage and lay eggs.
Well, yeah, I've never tried to lay an egg, but I had a few things I wrote that were eggs, but that's another story. Don't know. I mean, but it is encouraging to see how many folks are pushing back and recognizing that the government has no right to seize power over them.
Aha.
This is something which is a positive development of the Obama administration. There are more and more folks are recognizing that that the liberal savior and the man who is going to restore faith in the system is as power mad as George W. was. And even worse than Bill Clinton.
Now, we are coming to the conclusion that it's the system that breeds these kind of guys. It's the system that's broke. Not who's behind the lever of power or where's the ring of power. It's the ring. I mean, I'm like, you know, wow, well, that's been my goal this whole time, is it's the ring.
I hope you're right. I think back to the 1960s and early 70s, and there were so many people that lost faith in the government when Lyndon Johnson was president, and then Nixon came in office, and the other side of the aisle lost faith because of that, and then you had Gerald Ford, who somehow restored faith in the government. So I hope that the lesson sticks, that neither party is trustworthy, and that no one is entitled to this type of dictatorial power the presidents have captured.
They've been able to do this with a monopoly on dissemination of information. And no one, we had just, what was it, last week, Face the Nation had its lowest ratings ever. CNN is at its lowest ratings ever. Why the heck do they got Piers Morgan still? I mean, based on what?
Well, I mean, Face the Nation, I mean, you know, it's on Sunday morning. There's all kinds of things which you can do on Sunday morning. You can bike, boink, I mean, read a book, whatever. But, I mean, to watch TV on Sunday mornings, like, that's a sacrilege. You can go to church. You can do whatever.
Well, I mean, it's just lies, lies, and more lies.
And it's so predictable. It's so predictable. I mean, okay, you know, you have these guys, you know, with their shovels, and they're going to heave some at you, and the hosts are going to, you know, grovel and polish their boots, and... I don't understand it.
No, it is understood. The people are abandoning it. And it doesn't matter how low it is, because they need the Dick Cheneys to get up there and say, see, it's in the New York Times of a story that we gave them information print by government handout, which they did, and we're talking about it because they printed it because we told them to, and we get to talk about it, and now everybody else has got to write about us talking about it. I mean, I know how this goes.
Yeah, there's a huge amount of that. There's also some folks at the New York Times and some others who've got the gumption to blow the whistle and, basically pulling down the rafters on a lot of these horrendous abuses.
But you're looking for the outrage of the people, and I'm saying their outrage is manifest in that I don't give you any credibility anymore. And I'm like, yay. That is a big, giant win in our column. And I'm going, what do I want them to do? Go fix the newspaper? Screw them.
Ernie, I agree. I mean, but a devil's advocate point here, I think back to early, mid-1995, and you had a huge majority of folks who at that point did not trust the government. And then somehow the government was able to put itself back up on a pedestal, and people...
I'll give you an example. I'll explain this to you. Right after 2008, they started doing the big Tea Party thing. They had the Americans for Prosperity group, morphed here and so on. One of the head guys here, Ernie, we're having the big Tea Party rally at the state capitol, and they have, the Clear Channel station right there, like 5 feet, and you're doing the sound thing for the microphone, and they have congressman this goes up and congressman that and activists whatever, and they need Ernie to go up and lay hands on them at the Tea Party. And I'm going...
hands on is a great phrase.
And I go, and I put my first words out of my mouth. I go, look, I just want to make sure everybody knows I'm not with any of these guys, okay? And I want you to understand one thing, because they had just voted for the TARP, and Congressman John Shattuck, that brought it back as the Republican and fell on the sword, brought the TARP back, and we, turned them into, national socialization of the economy isn't fascist when I do it, John S.S. Shattuck. So we made a big deal, ran him out. But the point was, is I'm going, and he's up there talking, we save this and we do this and American freedom and all that crap. And I'm going, look, I want to make sure the thousands of people that you need to understand something. You see all these young people here? They never forget, and neither does the internet. Every word that these guys are saying right now, do you think they don't have the video of they said exact opposite just a few months ago? That they did certain things, the votes that they taken, the National Association of the Country, you think that they don't know? Do you think that when it comes the 2010 election cycle, it's not going to come up? Do you think? What did you think was going to happen?
Ernie, I agree with you, but if you think of Hillary Clinton and all the lies that she told about Libya from the start of the U.S. intervention there, and yet she's still being touted as some kind of great presidential candidate.
If we're lucky.
Excuse me?
If we're lucky.
If we're lucky, right.
Seriously. I mean, this is exactly my point. I'm like, are you kidding me? I'd give her $20 to run. Knock yourself out. Let me put it on the campaign contribution list. Hillary, you just go right on for it, baby. This is the point that I'm making. You know, this kind of stuff, but I don't think people really care anymore. Are we going to have an increase in voter turnout, or is it going to start going down? I remember in Kosovo, they had like a 30% turnout of those that were eligible to vote, and it didn't go the way the U.S. wanted, so they invalidated the vote. And they said, nah, not enough people, wasn't a, you know, a sanction of. And I'm going, heck, I remember a whole bunch of elections were less than that here in America. They don't count now. I mean, you know, so I'm just, it's the whole concept. I don't know what it is that you're looking for. What are you looking for? You know, armed rebellion, a ban? I mean, I don't understand what is a win to you.
I don't have a, this is something you've thought about more than I have. I don't have a clear standard on this, but I hope that you're right, that there is a much deeper groundswell against this government power than what I've perceived so far.
You know what I'm looking for? The next books that you write is on, you know, like the people abandoning the process, that are ready for when it does go. You know, I have so much of this kind of news and your articles and everything on Freedom's Phoenix, and I'll tell you, the most popular ones are beekeeping. How to grow your own food, you know, how to, you know, what in your bug out bag, the top 10 things to when the, you know, the zombie apocalypse comes. I mean, this kind of stuff, people want actionable, make them feel better things to do. I can see it in the traffic. It is amazing. And it doesn't matter how bad it, they go, yeah, I get it already. I already understand. That's why they like the way we do the site. You get the headlines. Yeah, I get it. I don't need to read it. You know, but this on how to grow food, you know, I'm all over that. So, I mean, you start going in and abandoning the man with the currency and the food and eating better and raising your children and homeschooling. You know, boom, big-time sales. I want James Bovard, more big-time sales.
I'll certainly try and do that.
Yeah, I'm telling you. You go do the Google trending. Go look at the stats. And I'm telling you, the people have abandoned government. They've abandoned it en masse. It is most... I'm next. I break with thee. And they start relying on the, won't you be my neighbor? Yep. You know, if you're neighborly, James Bovard. You know,
Ernie, I hope you're right, and thanks for having me on.
I have James on because you need this perspective. If you want to have weapons against the man and you want to be able to demonstrate and bring people along, you have them read any one of James Bovard's books. Go to today's archive, you know, which is what? You know, it is Tuesday, August 20th, and you'll see all the Amazon click. Just click. You know, get, heck, all of them. You know, because that gives you a glimpse into how bad they really are, and a unique perspective of someone that understands. It's just that I say the battle's almost won already.